Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by you. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, on this journey through culinary history. And today we're going to be talking about the resurrection of something that just about everybody is familiar with, at least in name. But the question is, how did a simple pie cart vendor develop one of the most famous hot dogs and then one of the largest restaurants in the country? We're going to find out about that. And what we're talking about is the Coney Island hot dog or the Coney Island Red Hot. Everyone, whether you've been to Coney Island, been to New York, or if you live, well, I would say probably outside the country even, you've heard of the Coney Island hot dog. It's become kind of a thing on its own. No one really knows, I think, what it is anymore. But back in 1867, a German immigrant developed this hot dog, and the rest is, as they say, history. My guest today is quite the Coney Island historian. His name is Michael Quinn. He's a former English teacher who really got interested in Coney Island and, in fact, used to give walking tours. Maybe you still, I don't know. Michael, you still give walking tours?
If I have the time.
Oh, yeah. Give walking tours of Coney Island. And he and his brother embarked upon a very special project to them to resurrect the Coney Island hot dog. Now, I have to understand, and he will tell us more, the restaurant, the man in question was Charles Feltman.
That's correct.
The restaurant was called Feltzman's.
Feltzman's, yes.
And it was shuttered never again to be serving in 1957 until you came along. So, Michael, I'm gonna hand it over to you, and I want you to give us all the details. I mean, who was Charles Feltman?
Well, thank you very much for having me here.
Sure.
On the show. Charles Feltman was a German immigrant. He was a baker by trade. He came here to the United States when he was 14 years old, back around in the 1850s. And he lived in Flatlands, which was a village at the time. It wasn't part of Brooklyn, the village of Flatlands. He roomed with a man by the name of Henry Lehman. And at first he worked as in the coals, like delivering coal. To Long Island and also to Smith Street, where he found a bakery there and decided, well, I'd like to get a job as an apprentice baker.
Huh.
And that's what he did. And then eventually opened his own place on Classen Avenue and then went on to open a second bakery on 10th Street in modern-day Park Slope, Brooklyn. And he was
so he was already enterprising before
yes.
he started the venturing on the hot dog.
Yes, yes, and you know so much of the story, which I'm going to tell today, you know, goes back to the immigrant experience of coming here from another country and being an entrepreneur and making something of yourself.
Right, right. So Coney Island. I've heard you heard videos. I've seen videos and heard recordings of you giving your talk on the history of Coney Island. I mean, Coney Island didn't even really exist when he was doing all these things. I mean, as it is, as people knew it. I mean, Coney Island, Luna Park, the amusement park, the boardwalk. I mean, that's, you know, the romanticized versions of Coney Island that everyone knows and today still exists.
Not as we know it as an amusement mecca, but people were going down there, starting to go down there around that time. Because it was accessible to this exploding metropolis, and people wanted to spend a day at the beach, and he'd started to sell his baked goods there around 1865 from his bakery. And in the summer of 1867, he noticed that people didn't want to eat pie and things that are sticky along the sand dunes of Coney Island.
Yeah.
They wanted lunch. So Henry Lehman, who he was roomed with at the time, worked at a meat facility by the Brooklyn Navy Yard. He was making all these type of, you know, beef and sausages and things like that, which kind of reflected the type of sausages that were made in their homeland of Germany. So we said, I have a good idea. You know, why don't I, if I can make them lunch. So we went back to his bakery on 10th Street, made these elongated buns and linked up with Henry at the meat facility and decided to create what we know today as the hot dog. Very similar to the sausages that are found in Frankfurt, Germany, but kind of changed a little bit.
So Henry Lehman really made the first
sausage. Yeah, the sausage exists at the time. Feltman came up with the bun and the idea. Then he went to a guy named Donovan. We only know his name is Donovan on East Newark, New York Avenue. And Donovan was a wheelwright, and he made his pie cart. So he goes to Donovan. He goes, listen, I got this idea. I want to sell these sausages and buns. I need you to convert my pie cart to work. I need a grill. I need charcoal. I need a barrel to keep the sausages cold. And, you know, I think he was scratching his head, Donovan, to, like, what are you going to do? And, you know, so, yeah, you know, you're paying for it. All right, I'll convert it. And that became the first hot dog cart.
Huh.
And that summer of 1867, Charles Feltman sold 3,684 what he called Coney Island Red Hots along the beach.
Amazing that you have that number. He was a very good bookkeeper. and why were they called? Yeah, why were they called Red Hots? They weren't spicy.
I think the color of it.
Color,
The color of it at the time.
Were they smoked meats?
It was smoked. Yeah, it was smoked. And you know, the nitrates, which so many hot dogs are filled with, really weren't added. It wasn't allowed to be put in meat until 1925, the USDA. So it was a very pure, clean Frankfurter sausage that he used. Remember, this is pre-mass production.
Right. Well, then the next thing you know he's selling it out of bricks and mortar. He's selling it in a restaurant, not just a cart. But right.
That was a few years later. So he did very well that summer. He met and fell in love with his girlfriend. She was 19 years old at the time. In the following winter, he got married at the Zion Lutheran Church. And it's still there in Brooklyn Heights. That's December of 1868, rather. And he decided to link up with a partner. His name was Wolf. And they opened up a little kind of shack in the late 1860s at Coney Island. And it was called Feltman and Wolf. So Wolf would handle the bar, and Feltman would be in the back handling the oysters and the Frankfurters. And that's pretty much where he had his first – went from the pie wagon, the hot dog cart, to an actual permanent location in Coney Island. And then by 1871, he started to build this enormous restaurant, dance hall, resort that, you know, through the 1870s became very, very famous worldwide.
Now, you say, to your knowledge, no one else had been serving these sausages in the form, well, obviously with the bun that he created, that Henry, that Charles created.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is really the world's first hot dog in a bun, right?
Yeah, and you have to understand, you know, even back then, New York, very fast town, you know, I mean, growing up here in Brooklyn, and everybody wants to walk and eat. You know, you see pizza, right, and the opening scene of Saturday Night Fever. So he understood that people didn't want to have to sit down. They didn't want to use utensils, you know, especially in Coney Island. It's recreation. Why, you know, I could take this sausage on a bun and ride a carousel or feed a baby or you know. That's a very New York thing that he understood. And it was a brilliant concept because it made him very wealthy.
Absolutely. Yes. There are some wonderful old photographs, archival photographs of the original Feltman's restaurant. Mm-hmm. And in the background, I mean, you see, it looks like an amusement park itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with a garden, you know, wonderful. Well, and gardens, ice cream gardens were very popular at that time.
Yes.
And it looks just like an ice cream garden.
Yeah. I think he drew a lot. He would visit Europe a lot and come up with different ideas because Feltman's wasn't just hot dogs. It was also French food. Obviously German food. They had a German beer garden. And their most popular item wasn't the Frankfurter. It was actually the shore dinner. It was called the Millionaire's Dinner. Huh. And it was $5. And the entire table was covered in turtle soup, oyster, clams, lobster. So that was, it was pretty much like Italy on a beach with amusement rides. It was
and anything you could
there
get.
There was nine restaurants on the complex.
Wow.
And very upscale. And Charles Feltman was the first person to actually bring live entertainment to Coney Island. He was the first to book, you know, world-class bands and, you know, music, and he had this, the thing was to go dancing at Feltman's, you know, the big hotel, and they also had the dance hall. And he was the first, everyone thinks about Luna Park, but he had 40,000 lights eventually by the early 1900s before Luna Park opened.
And he had a carousel too, didn't he?
He had what was known as America's most famous carousel at the time. And of course, a roller coaster later on called the Ziz, which his son wrote a song about, that basically went through the maple trees, drew the German beer garden down to the beach. So again, even though he invented this American iconic culinary item, he was known to bring the crowds in through entertainment. He knew what people wanted. They were interested in
it wasn't just hot dogs.
You know, he had 9 grilling stations selling 40,000 of them a day on both sides, Surf Avenue and the beach. But he also had different types of food and different types. He also had 2 theaters, and he had singing waiters. And,
wow.
You know, it was just, I think Coney Island was about entertainment, where people appreciated live entertainment in the flesh.
And so it became. I mean, it became a state.
Yeah.
What happened?
Feltman's?
Yeah.
I think Feltman's, well, Charles Feltman died in 1910, and his sons, Alfred and Charles Feltman, Charles L. Feltman, his other son, they had some success. And even through the 20s, it expanded and it was billed as the largest restaurant in the world. But I think it wasn't just Feltman's. I think all of Coney Island fell victim to the economic climate change of people weren't going to Coney Island anymore to get dressed up and have a fancy dinner and stay at a hotel. There were new immigrants coming in, and they were looking, you know, and then, of course, the Great Depression. And, you know, people just looking for other ways to entertain themselves. You know, you had the movie houses, you had people, and then eventually, years later, people would, the airplane fly to Miami or go to the islands, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it was just Coney Island in general. It wasn't really just Feltman's. And the overhead was just enormous. I mean, this Feltman's restaurant was 2 city blocks long. They would serve 10,000 people at a single sitting.
Wow.
They had about 600 waiters.
I was saying, how many people did they employ?
Nearly 2,000 employees. Yeah,
wow.
Nearly 2,000 employees.
Was the boardwalk built and in existence? When did that start?
The boardwalk officially was built in 1923, and it did take a chunk out of Feltman's property, especially his hotel on the beach side. They took it by an eminent domain that was Robert Moses, the architect there. And then it was cut a second time. People don't realize that the boardwalk was brought in 1941. That's the current boardwalk we know today is 1941. And it took even more of Feltman's property. But by then, in 1941, it wasn't the same restaurant anymore. It wasn't this extravagant, you know, entertainment culinary complex that it was in the past. And then the family sold it in 1946 to a hotel owner, before permanently closing in 1954, the property.
1954.
Before it became Astroland Park in 1962.
Well, a lot of people, so obviously it became not just a place to go and a restaurant. I mean, it was more than the restaurant, it was more than the hot dog. The hot dog became iconic.
Yes, yes.
But when people think of, when you say to them, oh, I'll have a Coney Island hot dog. Everyone has a different vision of what that is. So many times you go to the Midwest. They have Coney Island hot dog stand or, you know, vendors. But that will often involve chili on a hot dog.
Absolutely. Well, that was something different. Even though they used the name Coney Island, there's a Greek family many, many years ago that decided to open in Michigan a chain of diners called Coney Islands.
Huh.
And they decided to put chili and onions and mustard on it. They were just trying to, like, you know, use the fame of Coney Island, that
so
name.
So nobody could really trade.
There was no connection to Charles Feltman,
right.
yes. But there was a Greek family, and they're still there, and it's like Lafayette, Coney Island, and all these places in Michigan. And then it became known as a Coney, meaning basically the chili and all the toppings on top of a hot dog.
But if you came from New York, you knew that wasn't how you ate your hot dog.
No. It's either plain Jane, mustard, or sauerkraut. That's pretty much onions too. I do the raw onions, but.
And if you put ketchup on, being a Midwestern girl, if I put ketchup on, such a sin. I know I get
chided
all the time.
Yeah.
Great. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about how this icon left us and now has been resurrected and your story.
Absolutely.
When we come back after a short break.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by you. Heritage Radio Network makes your favorite food podcasts. And now we need you to lend your voice to our community and show your support of food radio. Become a member today. HRN releases 35 weekly shows each week and is a globally respected voice in food media. But believe it or not, we're still a very small grassroots organization. HRN is powered by a small but mighty staff of 4 people and HRN's incredible hosts who volunteer their time to bring you the best food podcasts out there. Our hosts are experts in their field, whether it's food writing, mixology, culinary history, craft beer, LGBTQ issues, and so much more. And they're committed to making sure that the stories that matter to you keep coming each week. We believe that a thoughtful, committed group can change the world. So join us. Add your voice and support HRN by making a donation of any amount. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Okay, we're back. And I'm talking with Michael Quinn. Michael Quinn and his brother, and do you have other people involved in the business, I'm sure?
Yes, we have a few people that work for us. So.
All right. Have resurrected the famous Coney Island hot dog. No, not the place where it's sold and not on Coney Island. And although you did try that for a while, too,
that's correct.
Right?
Yes.
But first of all, I want to ask you, you know, this was a very special project for you and your brother. So what drew you to do this?
It's my grandfather. You know, my grandfather went to Feltman's. His father had taken him to Feltman's.
And you grew up in Coney Island area in Brooklyn?
Yeah, I was born in an apartment building owned by Trump. But it's not Donald Trump. It was actually Fred Trump on the building that I lived. But that's for another segment.
Yes.
But I grew up in southern Brooklyn in that area. And, you know, spent much time down there. But it was really my grandfather who used to talk about Feltman's. And he used to take me he lived in Windsor Terrace, Brooklyn. He used to take us for breakfast on Fort Hamilton Parkway. And Charles Feltman is interred in Greenwood Cemetery. And I believe he has the second largest mausoleum there. It's about the size of my parents' beach house. It's enormous. So he would point and say, "You see that guy over there? That's the guy who invented the hot dogs." I didn't know what he was talking about. So, and then his father, who's known as Pops, was actually friends with Christian Lehman, who was Henry Lehman's nephew. So Pops was known.
Small world.
Yeah. So Pops was just known as, like, he would always make sausages all the time. He was an amateur sausage maker. So that's how my grandfather acquired the recipe that was made way back when. And I acquired it from him in 1992, and the recipe was on stationery. And it was actually, the address had 1000 Surf Avenue, but I didn't realize at the time that Feltman at that time had a second restaurant, Feltman's Tivoli, which was located on 5th and 2nd. And I researched it since then, and it burned down in 1895, but it had billiards, a pool hall. And the day it burned down, the Brooklyn Daily Eagle from the roof of the building in Brooklyn Heights, the cover, they had a drawing of this fire. So for years, I had this recipe that was brought down. And I didn't know, my grandfather certainly wasn't, I wasn't the sausage maker. And I really didn't know what to do with it. And my brother, I have two younger brothers. Middle brother had passed away since 9/11, my brother Jimmy. But we wanted to bring back a business like Feltman's. And my brother Joe was at West Point, and at the time 9/11 happened, he went to 10 years in Iraq and Afghanistan. And when he returned, that's when we decided, well, let's do it in memory of our grandfather and also Jimmy. But that's when we decided to kind of bring back Feltman's. We acquired the rights to the name, and with the recipe, we just whipped it up.
So it really is about the ingredients and the making and the manufacturing of this
absolutely,
hot dog.
Absolutely.
Which, tell us what that involves, what that entails, what it is, without giving away the recipe.
Well, the thing that makes a difference between Feltman's and any other hot dog is, you know, there's no nitrates. It's all lean cuts of beef. It's all well-balanced natural ingredients. That's what the hot dog was before mass production.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know,
it got such a bad rap. Right?
It did, yeah, because it was it's like a lot of food. You know, it became a street food. You know, it wasn't kind of, and it did get a bad rap. And I think the first bad rap it received was from a guy named John Y. McCain, not the McCain you're thinking of, another one, who was the constable of Gravesend at the time. John Y. McCain, back in the late Grover Cleveland elected, many couple of presidents elect, very, very powerful. He started a construction business. He actually has one building that still exists in Coney Island that he had built. And didn't drink, didn't smoke, taught Sunday school at Sheepshead Bay, but allowed prostitution, gambling, drinking in Coney Island because it was an economic necessity. So at first he banned these things until he went down to the facility by the Brooklyn Navy Yard and inspected and see how they weren't made out of dog meat. That was the rumor or some kind of. And then he became very close with Feltman, actually, McCain. And, you know, Feltman also had a casino and allowed drinking. So it wasn't, you know, eventually they had amusement rides. But, you know, Coney Island was a completely different animal back then than you think of today. But he was the first to ban it because, and then eventually when he inspected the facility and saw that, oh, it really is real, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's when it it kind of went forward.
So you actually resurrected the establishment as well, one of the restaurants, did you not? I mean, you sold them out of a restaurant or out of a storefront or?
Yes. I approached the current owner of the property is the city of New York. And they licensed it to a company based in Italy called Zamperla, which here it's known as, they own it, it's called Luna Park. It's not the original Luna Park, but they kind of had taken the name. And we licensed it to them for a couple of seasons. We had a contract, and unfortunately, they breached the contract severely. Mm-hmm. My brother had saved thousands of dollars while he was overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan, and you know, they had taken money from him and didn't complete the corner, didn't put up the sign, didn't paint the corner, and there was a lot of, we got tons of publicity for it, but they just had no one managing the place. And so that's what happened at the time. But it was the exact address as where Feltman's was located. Mm-hmm. But the press was just incredible. I mean, New York Post, it was just, from a marketing perspective, it was great. But I was hoping that we could kind of have a good partnership with them, which just didn't happen.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame. But the good news is, mm-hmm. The hot dogs are manufactured. They're manufactured and packaged and mm-hmm. and sold all over the country.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely. And you know, before I did that, I had a little takeout window on St. Mark's Place. That's where things really started to happen for us. Theater 80. It's owned by a gentleman by the name of Lorcan Otway. You should visit there. It has a Museum of the American Gangster. It used to be a speakeasy, wonderful place in 80 St. Mark's Place. So he rented to me this little takeout window, and day five, Gothamist said, behind this tiny window is New York City's best hot dog, and that led to a review by New York Magazine.
Oh, Zagat's even rated it as the best thing to eat in
yeah,
the summer,
it was.
Right?
But it started, and I was working my butt off. Like, I started part-time, then I was doing 10-hour days from this tiny, no air conditioner, tiny little takeout window in the East Village. 10 hours a day, you know, and then I got to the point where people wanted to, my butcher shop said, hey, can I carry this? And it's another store. And I said, you know what? Forget about this. Why don't we just package it?
Yeah,
and,
so be and wholesalers, sell
it.
Right.
Yeah, let's just wholesale it. So we closed that location a year ago. And
kind of hard to compete in New York City with Gray's Papaya and, you mm-hmm. know, so many of the different hot dog places mm-hmm. that are around. Yeah. And they're not, I mean, they, you know, people are diehard fans of their favorites, but
yeah.
This one is one you can really stand behind. Right?
Well, it is, and you know, we have people like Kobayashi, who's the Japanese hot dog mm-hmm. eating champ years ago. I mean, he tried it one time, and his eyes went behind his head. He said, this is the best hot dog I've had in my entire life, and I've had a few of my lifetime, and we hang out once in a while, and it was one night, one place that sells our hot, which I'm very proud of, even more than bringing it back to Coney Island, McSorley's Ale House, which is the oldest saloon in New York City. And they carry Feltman's hot dogs, and they sell very well there. And I was in there one night with Kobayashi, and he ate like six in a row along the bar, and everyone nuts. And we ended up in the Daily News the next day. But it was it's a lot of fun, I guess.
Well, Coney Island, of course, there are so many great stories about Coney Island and, mm-hmm. and famous people and famous things mm-hmm. that you know that have happened there. But as far as Feltman's has its own share of famous stories and famous people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was well known throughout the country. When you come to Coney Island, you got to go to Feltman's, right?
Mm-hmm. It was at the
and I have some little factoids here mm-hmm. that President Taft and mm-hmm. of course Diamond Jim Brady. He was always around.
Mm-hmm.
So President Taft invited Diamond Jim Brady.
Yeah, well, I think Taft was from Cincinnati, and there's plenty of German restaurants there, and he loved his German food. And when he was in town, he made sure the Feltmans made sure that they had a table for President Taft. But he actually skipped out on a bill once. He went on the carousel. He used to like to ride Feltman's carousel, and he skipped out on a $150 present.
Too many steins.
Too many
beer,
steins
maybe?
In the beer garden. Yeah, at the time. And then Diamond Jim Brady actually, he would eat a place called Lou Chow's, which is kind of like the Feltman's.
Famous.
Yeah, my family used to go there also on 14th Street, but it was kind of like the Feltman's in Manhattan. You know, it was right by Union Square there, and he would eat there in the morning, but then he would pick up. He was the first person. Diamond Jim Brady was the first person in New York City to own an automobile. And he would pick up his mistress, Lillian Russell, the actress, and they would go to where Bay Ridge was as a Catholic, all girls Catholic high school there. That was their love shack. And then they would go to Feltman's, but Feltman gave him his own parking spot there. Huh. And he would sit down, and he was an enormous man. He would just eat all day. He was just a complete gourmandizer. But he would sit down and eat three short dinners at $5 a pop and leave $5, $20 bill, leave $5 for the waiter. But he was a regular there at Feltman's, and it was more than the hot dogs. I think he went for the seafood, you know.
Huh. Yeah. Yes. Well, now this one, I don't know, a lot of stories have trailed this man, but Al Capone mm-hmm. was said that as a teenager when he lived in before he moved out to Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
That
he was born in Brooklyn, yeah.
He was frequented Feltman's?
Yes, and if you read his biography, it clearly states that Al Capone, I know Nathan's tries to claim it, but Nathan's wasn't there yet, and he we get off at the train there, and he would first he would see the crowds in front of Feltman's, and he made sure that his belly was filled with Feltman's frankfurters before working the night shift at a place on the Bowery, Coney Island's Bowery, called the Harvard Inn. It was actually one night. He was 18 years old. He got into a fight with Frankie Galluccio, another gangster, after saying something inappropriate about Galluccio's sister. Galluccio took out a knife and sliced him, I think, twice in the neck and once in the cheek, and fell to the floor there, and they rushed him to Coney Island Hospital, and stitched his face up, and hence the nickname Scarface.
Yeah, Scarface.
It was right there
right.
in Coney Island. Wow. And hopefully kept the Feltman's hot dogs in his belly that night.
Right. Well, you mentioned, you briefly touched on Nathan's. Now, mm-hmm. Nathan's famous. Nathan's mm-hmm. famous, another, you know, huge hot dog mm-hmm. chain and
yep.
and iconic hot dog, if
yes.
you will. But there was, when they did came around, because when did they came around? Much later.
Yep.
And was there controversy between the two? Were there any, there was competition, certainly, but...
Similar story with Nathan Handwerker. It's Charles Feltman, another immigrant. Charles Feltman was Lutheran, German. Nathan Handwerker was Jewish from an area, well, now it's called Poland. But he arrived here with nothing. You know, he got here with pennies, maybe. And Nathan Handwerker got his start working on Spring Street, Monday through Friday. It was a place called Max's Busy Bee, and it was a little kind of a greasy spoon type of place. Hmm. But he worked there Monday, Friday, but he wanted to save money like every immigrant, right? He wanted to get ahead and work weekends, so he was trying to look for a weekend gig. So he went to Coney Island once, went around looking to see if he could, was unsuccessful. Went back to Max's Busy Bee, and someone gave him the tip. He goes, listen, why don't you go, this is the magic word, Feltman's, go to Feltman's. 600 waiters. So he went in there and applied for a job at Feltman's. Now, this is after Feltman had passed. This is the summer of 1915. So Feltman's sons had the business at the time. And he got a job as a meager bun slicer at one of the 9 grilling stations at Feltman's. And he spent the weekend sleeping on the kitchen floor to save money traveling back and forth from the lower Manhattan. He slept on the floor of Feltman's kitchen. And he lived off of Feltman's frankfurters. And then he happened to meet 2 singing waiters who just got their start in show business at Feltman's in the German Beer Garden, named Jimmy Durante and Eddie Cantor.
Hmm.
So from what I've heard is that they're the ones who got him, was able to score him a loan of $300 because he was very good. He was a hustler to leave his job at Feltman's and go down the block and open up his own spot, which he needed a partner at the time. And initially he was selling the same type of hot dogs that Feltman's was selling. But he knew he couldn't compete with Feltman's 10-cent francs. He wanted to undercut Feltman's. And that's like going up against, you know, the Death Star. I mean, going up Feltman's was the head of the Chamber of Commerce, the Feltman's. Hmm. It was really, really, it took a lot of chutzpah, as he would say, to do that. So because he brought out his partner. His partner's like, I'm not going against Feltman's. He found a manufacturer in called Swift. Now, Swift had this machinery that debuted at the Columbian Exposition, getting ready for mass, you know, the industrial age, mass producing sausages at a very high rate, efficiently, at a low cost. So he was able to have a hot dog that wasn't the same quality as Feltman's, but it was so cheap that he was able to sell it for a nickel.
Mass produce it, right.
Yes.
Then come to be known as Swift's Premium, right?
Swift's.
But
he was at Swift's, I think, the first year, and then he switched to a company called High Grade. Now, High Grade became Ballpark Franks. They were bought out. So that's High Grade. And they were based in Newark, New Jersey. And there was a guy named Sam Solatz, his name was. And he, when Feltman's closed, Nathan's Famous decided, well, let's perfect our spice blend. They had Sam at High Grades to create the spice blend of Nathan's that we know today. Sam left his job at High Grades and then started a company called Master Purveyors. And Master Purveyors makes some of the best restaurants in New York City, from the steakhouses to the burgers, come from Master Purveyors. Pleta Luger steaks come from Master Purveyors. J.G. Mellon's Burger, Neary's, famous restaurant on 57th Street, their lamb chops, named after Kathy Lee Gifford, come from Master Purveyors. So that was the place where he was the guy who actually created the current spice blend for Nathan's hot dogs. But the point is, Nathan was able to undercut Feltman's, and then, like I said early in the podcast, the economic climate changed. You know, it was, people couldn't afford to go to Feltman's and get dressed up and get a table and you know, pay 10 cents for a hot dog. We get it at Nathan's and, you know, run to the beach with it. And, you know,
Well, so tell us, where can people around the country, because we have listeners from all around,
sure,
if they're interested in tasting an original Coney Island hot dog, but you have to ask for Feltman's.
Feltman's of Coney Island.
Coney
That's the original,
Feltman's
original recipe.
Feltman's of Coney Island.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where can they get these?
I think the best thing you should do is check the website, feltmansofconeyisland.com. Right now, as we speak, we're in about 1,500 supermarkets from here to California.
Wow.
A year ago, I was in 17. So, you know, we're just breaking out in a big way. And locally here in New York City, you could find it at Stop and Shop, Fairway Market, D'Agostino, Cristiti's, the West Coast, you know, in Los Angeles, we're in a bunch of supermarkets out there also. And also in Florida, the Fresh Market. So Bristol Farms in Los Angeles. So I think, you know, but the best way, and also we ship nationwide. So if you go to feltmansofconeyisland.com, we could ship you the hot dogs, we could ship you the mustard. And it's been amazing. It's been, you know, the reviews, the feedback, the way that the business is blown up. And we're very proud to be, you know, a veteran-owned business. That's where you want to get to.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask is that you did a very special thing for Veterans Day, especially, but also with the business, that you tell me about that.
Yes. My brother is a West Point grad, and we have about six employees of Feltman's, and they're all veterans, you know. And we're very proud. You'll see that on the pack, veteran-owned. And this Veterans Day weekend, online sales, all profits are going to go to special causes.
That's
the veterans causes.
This will be airing a couple weeks from now. But
yes.
So over the Veterans Day weekend,
absolutely. And my brother, who's a partner in this, he is also the head of an organization called the Headstrong Project. It's a nonprofit that helps veterans with their mental health needs. So they get help immediately. There's no bureaucracy.
So the funds will go to
We're going to probably just even it out throughout. Yeah. We just don't want to stick to one organization, but we're looking to give back to the veterans. Yeah.
Interesting. An iconic American from a German immigrant, which makes sense.
I mean,
so many of the immigrants, that's how they started, right?
Absolutely.
They knew how, they missed their food of home. They knew their food of home.
Mm-hmm.
They could cook. So with
very
little in their pocket, they could
Absolutely.
Start a business.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. It's such an American story.
It really is.
And then to give back to the veterans, I mean, that's a wonderful tie-in to that. I think
it is. It's just the home run all the way around with this business. You know?
Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you so much. Michael Quinn.
Thanks.
And I know you have so many more stories about Coney Island. Mm-hmm. You are a font of Coney Island knowledge. It's really
and
great.
New York in general. I love New York City.
Yeah. I thank you for spending the time and visiting me here at Roberta's. So even though we're not eating the hot dogs, we have a Roberta's pizza in front of us, which now has an Italian food. There you go. And it's become an American icon.
Just as good as the hot dog.
Well,
New York City.
You know, okay. You said it, not me. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening. Again, this has been A Taste of the Past. A Taste of the Past is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends. And please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.